Tatev. We're dealing with Tavshin Ayin Vav. So the pasuk that we're going to deal with is right after we go through all the injuries. It says in Parakhov Vav Pasukhov Dalad, Ayin Tachas Ayin, Shen Tachas Shen, Yod Tachas Yod, Regel Tachas Rogel. You have an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, and a foot for a foot. Kviyat Tachas Kviyat Tachas Batsa Chabura Tachas Chabura. I don't have good answers to all this. A burn for a burn, a wound for a wound, and a wound for a wound. So there's no real other, you know, the way Rashi explains what they are, but that's that. So if you've learned Bava Kama, if you've even heard of Bava Kama, then you know that this pasuk is not to be taken literally, okay? The Tzedukim thought so. The Tzedukim always thought that an eye for an eye is literally an eye for an eye, and that a person has to lose an eye whenever they smack out the eye of their friend. And so too, the Code of Hammurabi. The Code of Hammurabi was a written on a stone that was from years and years ago. They attributed to 1700 before the Common Era, to around that time, in which they say literally, I don't know, you know, I can't verify any of that for you, but an eye for an eye is literal, and then it goes through. It seems to expand upon the idea. In fact, it could be that one of the entire books based on the Hammurabi, is all written on the basic idea of an eye for an eye, where if you do something, you get that thing done right back to you. That's the concept behind it. But Chazal are unanimous that it refers to a monetary payment, that an eye for an eye is not literal, but rather it's a payment going from one to the other. There is a Tana in Bava Kama, in Pegimol, on Pegimol of Days, that says Rabbi Eliezer, who seems to say that it's mamish, an eye for an eye, but Rava and Ravashi reject the idea, say that it means something different. The Gemara even says, mamish salkedaitoch. Could it possibly be mamish? Does he argue on all the Tanaim and Amorayim that were mentioned above that all say that ayin tachas ayin is referring to money? Is there anybody like that? Is Rabbeinu Hanano that might seem to explain it a little bit differently? But regardless, that's that. The Rambam in Chovo Mazik, Hilchos Chovo Mazik, Perek Gimel says that all this is mefurish from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a halacha l'Moshe Nisinai. It's all mefurish from him. It is absolutely halacha l'maisa for us. Our forefathers always judged cases away from the times of Yeshua. It was never literally an eye for an eye, but rather money. That's how they ended up paying for it. That's what it ended up being. That's one after the other. That's the idea behind it. Now, when we look into the Pirusha to try to explain this idea, Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel says the words, when he translates the words, he says, Demei Eina Chalaf Eina. The value of an eye in exchange for an eye. Now, that's already explanatory. You have the value of an eye, not literally an eye for an eye, but the value of an eye for the other one. The Targum Unculus, interestingly enough, does not say that. Unculus says, Eina Chalaf Eina. An eye literally traded in for an eye. That's all he says. But regardless, we have Yonasan ben Uzziel, Demei Eina Chalaf Eina. Rashi tells us, based on that Gemara, that it can't be taken literally. Obviously, you've got to subtract the guy's value in order to figure out how much the guy is worth right now, but it can't be that you literally blind him mamish. Why not? Says the Gemara, this is in Bava Kama, Pegimol, based of Eidal and Aleph, 8 reasons are given as to why it can't be that you would literally blind him. So let's go into a couple, and I'm sure you guys can come up with some of your own, on your own, without any problems. Number one, we compare hitting a human being to hitting an animal. When you hit an animal, you got to pay for it. When you hit a human being, you got to pay for it. If we would go ahead and do it literally by a human being, right, then it would have to be the same by the animal. And that's obviously ridiculous. You knock out the eye of an animal, that you would lose your own eye for it? That's ridiculous. Since they're compared to one another, we do it in that way. There's no way to do it otherwise. Number two, there's a gzeres hakasuf. Lo sichu kofer lenefesh rotzeach. You cannot be paid to take away a murder case, but you could for limbs that are cut off, for a lost eye, for anything like that. That you'd be allowed to do. Number three, no two people have the same size eye or the same eyesight, which means if I would knock out somebody's eye who, let's say, is not wearing any glasses, and I am a negative 750 in my eyes. Thank you, reading at night, but negative 750 in my eyes. So knocking out my eye would not be the same as me knocking out the person's eye, the person that I did beforehand. One eye for an eye would never be equal. That doesn't make any sense. You're not going to have such a thing. So that's the reason why it can't be they're never equal in the same size or the same eyesight or anything like that. The size is an interesting one. Let's say one guy has blue eyes, the other guy has brown eyes. A blue-eyed person was worth clearly, I'm brown-eyed, clearly less than a brown-eyed person. So therefore, because of that, maybe when I knock out the person's eye, I should get my eye out, and there's an extra payment you have to pay. That you don't have to do, for sure you don't have to do that. That's number three. Number four, how can we punish a blind man that blinded somebody else? And then, if a blind man blinded somebody else, then what do you do with the guy's eye? If you blind him, he's already blind. There's nothing he can do. So it must not be literal. It's got to be taken in a different way, because literally, you won't be able to do it. The guy's blind already. Number five, I believe we're on. He might die if you take out his eye. Meaning, granted, this guy didn't die, but who knows? When you punish somebody by taking out their eye, who knows what's going to happen that way? You could kill him, and you can't kill a person. It's got to be the equal punishment if you're going to say it literally. So therefore, since he doesn't deserve death, we can't try it. Number six, the word king, nothing, bo, always denotes money, anything that you have to give from one to the other. Number seven is gzeirah shavah tachas tachas. Number eight, anybody know what else you got to pay for when you make the guy lose his eye? Aside from the payment for nezek, what else do you have to pay for? There's four other things involved. Time off of work is sheves, ripui, boshes, and you're missing one. Tzar. The tzar that's missing over there. So let's think. If I have to pay for somebody's doctor bills and somebody's sheves, why? If the whole idea is that I'm paying an eye for the eye, meaning I lose my eye because I knocked out that guy's eye, then I shouldn't have to pay for doctor bills. I shouldn't have to pay for anything. The Torah says specifically, v'rapo yirape. Shitto yitemlo. You gotta pay sheves, you gotta pay ripui. But why? It's supposed to be just an eye for an eye. Literally an eye for an eye. Why should I have to pay anything else? It must be for the fact that you're paying other things, that you're only paying for the eye as well. That's the idea that Rashi says. Now, I'd like some help with this. I really, if anybody can answer this for me, I'm willing to give you money for this. I could not figure out this rokeach, and I felt really bad when I was doing it. The rokeach says there are 12 words in the pasuk. Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yod tachas yod, regel tachas regel. That's 12 words altogether in this pasuk. And you can read the whole pasuk without moving your lips once. Think about that. Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yod tachas yod, regel tachas regel. In theory, I moved it a little bit because I'm whatever. You don't have to. You can read the entire pasuk without moving your lips. And that's why we're saying that it's not literally an eye for an eye, it's only money.
I learned something last night by Rabbi Tursky.
Yeah.
That there are four letters in the...
Boom. Facebook Mempe.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So it doesn't contain those, therefore you don't get...
But how do you know that's mumbo? How do you know this mumble? Mumble. I don't get it. Like, what does that mean? So you have 12 words in the pasuk, and you don't have to move your lips for it, so that tells me that it's going to be mumble? Hey, honestly, anybody can come up with an answer. I have no idea what the Rokeach is saying. He was brought down by the Baal Tosfos as well. I have no idea what this Rokeach is saying. I have no clue. I just don't know what the answer is. If anybody has an answer for that I would really love to know. I have no clue. Ibn Ezra gives another reason why Beis Din doesn't blind him. Let's say the hitter caused him to lose a third of his eyesight. A third of his eyesight. He didn't lose his full eyesight. He smacked him in the head so hard, right, that he lost a third of his eyesight. How in the world are you going to do it back to that guy? Says Ibn Ezra. You can't do that. How can you do a value. How in the world could you say literally, I'm going to knock out a third of that guy's eyes? There's no way to give him a wound like that. So there was a man named Ben Zuta. You should know, Ibn Ezra hated Ben Zuta. Ben Zuta said, when an ox gores another one of his friend's oxen. So Ben Zuta said that Shoreu meant his friend the ox. When the ox gored his friend the ox. Says Ibn Ezra, no oxen have friends except for Ben Zuta. That's that. He hated Ben Zuta. Ben Zuta was obviously some guy who was a little bit off, who kept saying things and was like that. Ibn Ezra said, right, this guy Ben Zuta argued the point and said that it should be literally. It should be literally. Because there are other psukim in the Torah that seem to say that, but Rasadia Gaon knocked out all of his opinions and knocked out Ben Zuta completely and what they were trying to say. So Ibn Ezra says it's clear it can't be literal for that reason, that there's no way to understand how to do it by a third. It's got to be that it's a payment of money. But you know what pshat is? You know why the pasuk says an eye for an eye? Because you should have that happen to you. When you blind someone, it should be that we blind you back. It should be that way. But we don't, because we can't, and we make you pay money. It's almost like a deterrent. Don't do it, because this is what happens when you go ahead and you blind a person like that. It's a deterrent. Don't do this. You should lose your eye. The Sforno says the exact same thing. It should be mida keneged mida. We blind you for blinding someone else. But because we can't, therefore we pay money instead. But that's how you should look at it. What's up, Yuda? Now that, right there, is the main idea. What are they trying to say? So if you pay, does that absolve you of losing your eye? Or is that just, well, we can't do anything else? You're not absolved, but you might as well pay. You might as well do something. Which one is it? That they're not answering. Good, Yuda. We'll get to that. We're going to try to understand that.
Maybe the payment is just through the other person. It's not for you.
That's a good call as well. Because let's think about it, right? Obviously, if I lose my eye, that's a punishment to me, but that doesn't help the other person. The other guy is not gaining by me losing an eye for him losing his eye. That's not going to help him at all. But if I pay him, then clearly he's gaining something back. He's allowed to get something back.
Does the guy have to gain something?
Well, he's not the one knocking your eye out. You don't say, like, you know, you knocked, I knocked your eye out, so go ahead. Just go. That's that. Yeah.
He doesn't necessarily have to gain something from the person who did something to him.
Well, he needs to at least make it up, let's call it, right? I mean, something should be made up to him.
Like someone kills somebody.
Yeah.
That person gets killed.
Well, then you don't have a choice because the guy's not around. But his family might get restitution and Copper. There is such things. Yeah, there's no restitution in that case. There's no possibility. In this case, there is possibility. He can be rescued. There can be some type of payment. The Moshe Zakenu brings from a Gemara Nida Yud Gimel on the base. I'm not going to be able to explain the entire thing over here, but the Gemara says that anyone who constantly puts his hands below his belt should have his hand cut off. That's how the Gemara puts it. Okay, and it seems to be literal. The Gemara then goes on to say, wait, is that literal or is it just a curse? It's just saying it figuratively. It should be as if, right, his hand is cut off. Or does it mean literal, his hand should cut off? And the Gemara follows up and it says, it's literal and Rav Huna Mamish did it to somebody. Rav Huna literally did it to someone. What do you see from there? You see that in theory, we do an eye for an eye, but where it's impossible for us to do it correctly, then we do money instead. But the concept of doing something literally an eye for an eye, the concept is there. It's there. So it would be the exact same way. You knock off a person's hand, you should know the same way because the pain won't be the same. The ability for him to use his hand is not the same. The size of the hand is not. All the answers that we just gave from Baba Kama are all the exact same thing. Because there's a kusav is still there. The tachas is still there. So all those things are right there. But it is interesting that there is a concept of doing something literally. Now granted, that was the person. You saw the difference? Here it's, I'm blinding someone else, so I should be blinded. That's the ayin tachas ayin. Over here, I put my hand in the wrong area. Therefore, my hand is cut off. Meaning it's me on myself. That's the concept where it's a little bit different from this case. The Torah Tamima adds on that we know the Torah is Duracha Darkei Noam. It's a pleasant way. It's a pleasant thing to do and it's a right. It's a good thing. The Torah doesn't do things like that. It wouldn't make any sense for the Torah to punish someone this way with something that's not going to help the Nizik at all. Something like this. This wouldn't make any sense. It must be that we pay for the eye instead. That we do ayin tachas ayin is mammon instead of mamash. It's got to be that way. It makes no sense otherwise for it to be that way. It says the Torah to me, for it to go that way. The Ramban points out something as well, that you got to be careful, we don't take it from death. Okay, we went through that before. And the Orach Chaim HaKadosh points out Vinastata, which we didn't really concentrate on, but it's brought up in the puzzle before, and to try to get down this idea, how it goes over there. So either way, that's the concept that's brought over here. Let's go into another idea. And Yehuda, you really were hinting to this before with your previous question. Yes. Let's say eye for an eye is literal. Let's get this idea of eye for an eye being literal, right? And the pasuk says it straight out. We know it's impossible, but let's say it is. Can that be understood in a different vein? Not that you're literally getting the guy's eye, cutting the guy's eye, or cutting the guy's hand, or cutting the guy's leg. Is there another way that we can learn it? The Tam Bidas, written by Rav Sternbach, says, when you blind your friend's eye, not only should you be blinded, you should lose your ayin ruchnius as well. Your spiritual eye should be destroyed. You should lose not only your eye, your ruchnias dika eye should be gone as well. Now, what does that mean exactly? Because every part of your body corresponds to a part of your nefesh. The hand, the physical hand, is corresponding to a spiritual nefesh, spiritual hand that's up there in your mind. Your physical eye, which sees what's in front of you, the physical things that are in front of you, corresponds with that spiritual eye, that eye that's beyond this world, the eye that's able to see the nefesh, the ruach, the nesham of a person. That's the concept. When you blind a person's eye, you lose your spiritual eye, says Rav Sternbach. You can't see the way you once did. There's an unbelievable story. I don't know if it's true, but they claim Rav David Chai Abuchatzer. Rav David Chai Abuchatzer, if anybody knows, is the grandson of the Baba Sali. He's the son of Rav Meir Abuchatzer, the grandson of the Baba Sali. He's named after the Baba Sali's brother, Rabbeinu David Abuchatzer, who passed away when the Baba Sali was a lot younger. He was about 25 years older than the Baba Sali himself. But that is Rabbeinu David Chai Abuchatzer. He still lives today in Eretz Yisrael. Yerushalayim. There's an unbelievable story where a child was kidnapped in England, an they came to get a bracha from Rav Davachai Buchatzer to be able to find out. And Rav Davachai Buchatzer was able to draw a map of certain streets in England, in London, and was able to say, the kid is right there. And they went, they sent police there, and they found the kid outside of a factory. The kid had been kidnapped and was thrown there, whatever it was, and that it was right there. They went back to Rav Davachai Buchatzer. They said, what happened? How in the world were you able to know this? How is this possible? He said, when you don't punish, you don't destroy your physical eye, you don't see things which are improper, you only see things that are proper, that are whatever spiritual, your spiritual eye is working overtime. And your spiritual eye can see from one end of the world to the other. Your eye can be everywhere. So in that line, we're going like this. When you make a person lose his eye, you do lose an eye, but it's not the physical eye. It's the spiritual eye that's taken out instead. Sedra Strumbach, in essence, you are blinded. You did lose that eye. There's something else that's gone, although it's not just like that. The Tzar Shlomo, the Radomsker, says a Jewish man has the ability, a Jewish person can cause a yisorus, an ability to awaken our Kadosh Baruch Hu from down below. You can do tshuva, you can daven, you can learn and cause things to happen by refraining from looking at things that you shouldn't be looking at. By stopping yourself from looking at those things, you can cause your spiritual eye, your ruchnias, to be so strong, stronger, more attuned to what you're seeing, you're able to cause differences in the world by what you're able to do. Again, by holding yourself back from seeing things that are improper. The hint in the pasuk is the following. Your eye down here has an effect on your eye up above, for good or for bad. It applies on all the limbs over here. So it's not, again, the literal translation of the pasuk, you knock out an eye, we're going to have to pay money, it's as if you lose an eye, etc. The remez, the hint of the pasuk is, when you use your eye improperly or properly, you allow your other eye to become stronger or weaker. When you use your hand properly or improperly, the hand up above becomes better or stronger or weaker. So too with the leg, so too with the tooth. Every part of your body goes through that way. Kviya, chabura, each one represents your connection to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Chibur, vavhe, is the chabura. The kviya is chav vav, is the gematria of havaya, and yud hey. That's the concept that we're bringing up here. Instead of saying that it's somehow that we're dealing with a person hitting another person, the remez is something totally different. Dealing with your ruchnias, dealing with you yourself and how you yourself are treating yourself and what ends up happening to you. Now the grah here is well known. Everybody knows the grah, right? The famous hint behind the pasuk that ayin tachas ayin. It shouldn't have said ayin tachas ayin. It should have said ayin be'ad ayin. An eye for an eye should have been ayin be'ad. Beis ayin dalid ayin. That's what it should say if you wanted to say literally an eye for an eye. Why ayin tachas ayin? So it only works by ayin. It doesn't work by yad or regal or anything else. What's the letter that comes after ayin? Ch. Thank you very much. But what comes after an ayin? After a natural ayin? A pay. That's okay. What comes after a yud? Chav. Come on, guys, you know this. This is not that hard. What comes after a nun? Samach. Chav, samach, pei is kesef. So ayin, tachas ayin, if you go under the eye, what do you end up having to do? You get kesef. Obviously, that doesn't work by shein. By shein, it would be tough and samach. That's tas. Doesn't work much, right? Or set. I guess you could have a set of something. But it doesn't work the same way by those. But the grug gives the famous remez. Where is the remez that ayin, tachas ayin refers to money? Don't worry, it's tachas. The ayin. When you go underneath the eye, when you go underneath there, that's what he says. Rabbi Nofan says the Rosh Yitevitz of these words: ayin, shein, yad, regal. The Rosh Yitevitz is usher. Because what is a true usher? An usher is someone who is healthy in every part of his body, in his eyes, his mouth, his hands, and his feet. Something like that. There is no greater bracha of wealth than to be healthy in every part of your body, so that your body is full in every which way. Says Rabbi Nofan, that's how we define an usher. So the question is, we sort of answered this before, but let's try to get into it. Why would the Torah write it this way? Why would the Torah write an eye for an eye literally if it's really kesef? Just write kesef tachas ayin, kesef tachas yad, kesef tachas rogel. Why not write it that way instead of writing an eye for an eye, which is not true? That's not how we hold. Why write it in such a strange form? Now I understand. I understand completely. We said, well, maybe it's that you lose your spiritual eye. Maybe we've had that. But still, it's strange that we should do such a thing. So that's what most of the Rishonim say. Most of the Rishonim say it's because you're supposed to lose your eye. Granted, we pay money. But the real shot is you should lose your physical eye. That's what should happen to a person. It doesn't. The reason why it doesn't happen is because Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, won't allow such a thing to happen. He won't allow it because we can't do it for whatever reason. But that's the idea. It's rachamim. It's the rachamim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Hashem is showing us what should be and how Hashem is rachamim on us and doesn't allow it to happen. You just came. So if you're going to ask a silly question, I'm going to be mad at you.
Why is that? I know
it's okay. It's fine.
I'm
yeah, go ahead.
But why is that what should happen? So what should happen is the guy should give the other guy a sight back, right? Like, how does me losing, I take your eye out, how does me losing my eye make your sight better?
Rega. Now, we did mention that, but it's not a bad thing that you're saying because I'm about to get to something very similar. So it's not so bad. But trust me, it was still a horrible example. I was ready to throw the challenge. That's what I was ready to do. Yeah, I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. I was ready for it. Now I'm sorry. I knew, not thought. The Rambam in Hilchos Chovos HaMazik, we mentioned this up above, says you should not, now listen to this, okay? He says it very, it's awesome. He says, you should not pay these payments through your own admission. If you're moged that you knocked out a person's eye, if you're moged, you go to court, no witnesses, you go to court and you say, I knocked out this person's eye, if you go to court and you admit to it, you don't pay. So that's what it seems to be. Now, that's only true by Ikanas. A payment, if it's Hilchos Mazik, that I damaged somebody, then seemingly you'd have to pay normally. You'd have to pay the normal amount. Even if I admit it myself, I'd have to pay the regular amount. Right? But if it's a Knas, then Modeh, the Knas, Pater. If you're Modeh to a Knas, if you admit to a Knas before it happens, then you're Pater. Yeah.
You don't pay any of the payments?
It seems that you don't pay Nezek for the eye. That's what it seems like. All the others, it seems like you will pay. Both says not, because that also is a Knas. But either way, but that's that. The question is, now, this is true, right, by a regular Knas, but I don't understand. It's different. A Knas, by definition, is an added payment that I'm not chayav for. Meaning, something like kefil, where I steal something and I'm chayav double, I'm chayav to pay for the keren, but if I admit to it, I'm puttering kefil, because that's a Knas. That's an added payment. I don't pay kefil. That's one thing. But I understand, here, this is a payment that I have to do because I owe the guy for what I just did to him. I damaged his eye, knocked out his eye, I need to pay him for his eye. How could the Rambam possibly compare that and say that that's considered a knas? How could that be? So what's the pshat behind it over here? So the Rambam must hold, this is from Reb Sternbuch, that these payments are not directly for your behavior. It's not for what you're doing. It is a kofer. What's the pshat? It must be that really you should pay an eye for an eye. You should lose an eye for knocking out the person's eye. But you can redeem it by giving money. You can do a pidyon by giving money. Do you hear what that means? That means that when you're paying the guy for the eye that you knocked out, it's a knas. You're not really supposed to do that.
But a pidyon is not a knas.
A pidyon can be a knas. That's what we're saying. It should be. The real punishment is to lose your eye. But you can't, so you're potter. But we want you to do something. So we knas you, we fine you to pay for it. That is a pidyon. It's not the pidyon in the classic sense of like I'm poda something from the base of Mikdash, but that is it's a kofer. Kofer is a knas. In that concept, all of a sudden you're potter from paying. In other words, you could knock a person's eye out and not do anything at all. Forget about knocking your own eye out. You wouldn't even have to pay according to this reason, according to this idea. It's a crazy concept, but that seems to be what the Rambam holds. That's how Rosh Hashanah understands it. The real question here is: does this akula, that akula that we're referring to? Does that apply to Nachman? Does it apply in the same way? Because we have this kula. Yeah, no. For them, knocking out the regular Jews, a regular Jew's eye. Meaning, a Yid has this din. Does it apply to somebody who's not a Yid? Does that apply to them? Maybe if they knock out a Yid's eye, maybe they should lose their eye. Maybe it should. Meaning the eye for an eye is literal at some sense. In some sense it's there, it's just we can't do it. But maybe for someone who is not a yid, it would count. I don't know. That's the idea, the concept behind this, which is really crazy. The idea of an eye for an eye, literally, it is literal. It's just that we can't do it, so we do money, but that's a kofer, that's a pidyon, that's a knas. That's something a little bit different. The Chazon Ish says an unbelievable line. Chazon Ish says these laws are more effective when they're not carried out. Everybody here has done makos, so you've heard makos. You've for sure have done the story at the very end with Rabbi Akiva. You've heard that 100 times. But everybody knows a Sanhedrin that kills once every 7 or 70 years is called a katzlanis. A katzlanis, a killer beis din, right? How could they have possibly have done such a thing? We don't want to kill. A beis din that kills is a bad thing. We don't want to be involved with stuff like that. We prefer not for that not to happen. Ben Sora Ramota. How many times have Ben Sora Ramota happened?
One.
Zero, possibly one, depending on Rabbi Yonason, right? Depending on how Rabbi Yonason learns it. But Ben Sora Ramota is there not for the fact that it will happen. That's not what it's there for. It's there not even really as a deterrent, but as the concept of learning Torah to understand what God wants from us, says the Chazon Ish. That's why we learned it as Ayin Tachas Ayin. It's not about the actual the chiyuvim and the payment. The idea of the chiyuvim, what you're supposed to do in Beis Din, Sanhedrin knows, and we know what it's supposed to be. Why would the Pasuk write it this way, an eye for an eye? Because the Pasuk is trying to tell us how chomer it is, says the Chazon Ish, to knock on a person's eye. You should lose your eye. I wish you would lose your eye. I can't do it. But the concept, the reason why the Torah writes it this way, is because it wants you to know. As the same way Ben Sora Ramota, the same way that there's an idea of killing somebody even though we don't do it, even though we barely ever can accomplish it with 2 Adam and Asura, etc. We want to know it's Musr, this is what should happen to you. La Halacha, we obviously know it, but that's the idea. This is what should happen to you. What were you going to ask? The Kasha is whether Avshalom. Rabbi Yonason said, I sat on the grave of the Ben Sora Ramota. The Kasha, what he meant by that, the Marsha and the Ben Ish Chai say famously that he's referring to Avshalom. And that's also brought down to Rav Yonatan Eifshitz. Whether or not that's actually Ben Sora Ramota, clearly, Avshalom did not die at the age of 13, right, in between 3 and 6 months. He didn't die. But did he have the status of a Ben Sora Ramota? He was 40 when he died. But did he have the status of Ben Sora Ramota? That's the real kasha, whether it is like that. Truth is, says Miam Lois, this pasuk proves, among others, that we have the concept called Torah Shebaal Peh. That we know there's a Torah Shebaksav. We know there are 304,805 letters. I think that's correct. That we know we have a limited amount of letters. But there's Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is on top of everything that we learn. And here is the proof. They always knew that Ayin Tachas Ayin meant money. It was Halakha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai, says Miam Lois. It was brought down from Moshe Rabbeinu from our Sinai to tell the people over. And they all knew that. But the Pasuk says it this way, and that showed the people. The people looked at it and said, wait, Ayin Tachas Ayin, an eye for an eye, but we know it's money. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, aha, now you're getting it. Now you're getting it. There's more to it than what meets the eye in the words of the Torah. There's something behind it. There's the Alta. Wait, what? It wasn't such a... Meets the eye. Oh gosh, no, that wasn't even like a rabbi joke. I didn't mean that. I really apologize for that, guys. I'm out of my element here. This is just like, but no, I do not mean it that way. Not possible. But that's the idea. The Rambam even says that this law was instituted by the days of Yoshua. The Rambam says it by the Beis Din of Yoshua and the Beis Din of Shmuel or Ramasi, that everybody knew this. This is not a newfangled concept where the rabbis in the year 2000 said, I think it should be money. That's not what happened. This was made as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu came down from our Sinai. He told them, you're going to see something called Ayin Tachas Ayin. It's not literal, it's money. Moshe Rabbeinu came down and told them and explained to them the concept of Torah Shebaal Peh. You want to see the Torah Tamimah on this? Beautiful piece from Baruch Epstein on this. Beautiful, beautiful piece. The Nitzutei Shimshon and the Rikanti says, you have to remember something else as well. Here's our fifth answer for this question, why we have to write it this way. There are secrets of the Torah that we don't always get to see. Ramazim, Sodos, real Kabbalah behind the Torah itself, not Kabbalah Center Torah, I'm saying Kabbalah behind the Torah itself, that are written inside there. You're right, the Pasuk should have said Ayin Ba'ad Ayin. You're right, the Pasuk should have said that it's Keseth for somebody who loses an eye. That's what it should say. But there's a Sod behind the Pasuk which requires the word Tachas, the palindrome that is known as Tachas. That word needed to be there inside, and without it, you know what a palindrome is, right? Yeah, like mom or madam, I'm Adam, you know, like those types of things. It's good. Yeah, race car. Those are, but that's the idea. But either way, regardless, see how much you learn here? I'm just saying, like, there's a reason why tachas has to be inside there. Why? Not for pshat. Not for pshat. In pshat, it really shouldn't be there. It should say money. But in remez, in drush, in sod, in kabbalah, there's a reason why I have to say it that way. So it says the Rikanti. You know why you don't get it? Because you don't know kabbalah. If you learned Kabbalah, you would never have a kasha. Why does it say ayin tachas ayin? I know, because I learned Kabbalah, so now I know. I don't, actually, because I'm not 40 yet, as you all know. But it'll be soon. It's so soon. All right, anyway, that's that. Rav Shimon Sofer. Rav Shimon Sofer, this is the son of the Chassam Sofer. You come to my house, if you look right on the right side of my, the left side, when you walk in, you come right by my seat, on the left-hand side of the wall, there's like a little painting. On the painting is Rabbi Akiva Eger. It's my great-great-great-great-grandfather. Right next to him is the Chassam Sofer, and the Sav Sofer. There's Reb Shlomo Eger, the Gileon Marsha, and Reb Shimon Sofer. Reb Shimon Sofer is the other son of the Chassam Sofer. He was the Eloi of Warsaw. Kasha, how somebody came from Hungary to become a Rav in Poland, that's already a shaila in of itself. Reb Shimon Sofer says the following. He says that this wording really does make sense. We mention what a person does, and then we tell you the punishment of such a thing. We tell you what he did, and then the punishment. So we tell you like this. Ayin was damaged, and I was damage. So the punishment is tachas ayin, something instead of the eye. Do you get it? The ayin is the damage, what you just damaged. Then therefore we have to pay you back tachas ayin. It's something instead of the eye, and therefore it's going to be something that's payment instead. Now here's the pshat, because the idea is that really the word tachas should not be used this way. Ayin tachas ayin, if it literally was an eye for an eye, so that wouldn't be the word tachas. It really doesn't translate well. Tachas means instead of, or because of. That's the idea behind it. An eye, because of the eye, doesn't make any sense. Why would somebody lose an eye because you knocked out somebody else's eye? The Ksav HaKabbalah talks about this. Rav Hirsch talks about this. They both refer to it. Everybody knocks it all out and says it's got to refer to a payment. It doesn't make any sense otherwise. So I'm shortening this. For Shimon Sofer, Ksav HaKabbalah, and Rav Hirsch all say the basic idea that tachas means instead of, and it's something instead of an eye, not the eye itself, but something that's going to take the place thereof. The Paris Yosef has a crazy idea, an absolute crazy idea. I read this and I said, this is the greatest idea I think I've ever heard before in my life. There were always castes in different societies. C-A-S-T-E-S. There were still different types of people, right? Poor people, wealthier people, people that were like that. There are laws in certain countries, there were laws in certain countries, and I'm sure this still exists today, that if a wealthy person, I'm sure, like in India, where if there's an extremely wealthy person that knocks out the eye of an extremely poor person, if something like that happens, all they have to do is make a small payment of sorts. Pay the guy back and everything's all done. Now, I want you to consider this just through the Torah's idea, okay? You pay for the eye. Well, let's say this guy has no job and he's very, very weak and he can't really hold a job in the first place. So his market value, even with his eye, is only, let's say, $1,000. Who would buy him for a slave? He's not going to help me much. He can't do much. His constituency is not strong enough for me. So why would I want this guy as a slave? His actual value is $1,000. So at the end of the day, when he was blinded, he didn't go that far down. It's not like he's that much worse off than he was beforehand. He was a Nebuch before, he's a Nebuch now. Now he went down from $1,000 to $900. So a person would just go up to a person, if he had a bloodlust, he would just punch a guy in the face and give him $100. Just do it. I mean, what difference does it make? He takes care of his issues of going around and doing, I'm sorry?
Like fun.
Yeah, meaning he would just go ahead and do it.
They used to have like a movie, it's called Bum Fights, where they would like pay bums to like beat each other up. And they would record it and they would sell it.
See, that's a little bit different because that's the bums beating each other up. You know what I'm saying? Here I'm saying, you would go up to a person, you know, I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to go up and I really want to punch somebody in the face. So what do? I punch somebody so hard in the face, I knock out his tooth. And then I say, alright, here's $5. How much does a tooth lose you? Honestly, one, two? What's the deal?
That ain't different than going, what is your price for me to punch you in the...
Agreed. But that's the point. That's exactly... Says the part of Joseph. There were places, there were societies where the nobility mamish did this. They wanted to get their lusts out, so they went ahead and did it. And it seems that this has happened throughout history. That there were people that went ahead and did this, and they knocked people out, and they just paid money. They knew there was nothing to worry about. What's the big deal? I'm not going to lose anything from it. I lose $5. I got $5 in my pocket. If I'm going to lose $5 from knocking out a person's tooth, I want to knock out a person's tooth. For this reason, the Torah says clearly, that's what the part of Joseph says. If you knock out someone's eye, you should lose your eye. Now, Beis Din knows, and the judges know, they're only going to make him pay. They're not going to actually, mamash, take out his eye. But the guy won't know that. And he'll read in the Torah, or he'll hear an eye for an eye. And he'll be scared. I know they say it means payment, but who says maybe they're going to knock out my eye? I don't want to lose my eye, so I'm not going to do it. That was the brilliance, says the party associate, of what's going on here. The Torah is telling us not what should happen, like the other Rishonim were saying, but rather a deterrent, a real deterrent that says, I know you're thinking. You think you can just pay a little bit and you'll be fine. No, I'm not going to allow that to happen. I'm not going to allow this to happen. Yeah. Yeah, they would. They would, right? But I'm sure, and this is, or you've got to know this. People ask me all the time, like, if a person does something wrong to another person and there's no two Adam and Asra, what, does the guy get off scot-free? Is that what happens? The answer is no. Koshin Mishpat, Simon Aleph, and Simon Beis already mentioned that Beisin is allowed to do whatever they need to do if they see fit. If they feel like a person needs to be killed, they will kill him. Even if he wasn't ready to die, al pi halacha. If they feel this guy needs to be thrown in jail, they'll throw him in jail. If they feel this guy needs to lose an arm, they will lose his arm. Remember we just said up above Rav Huna? Rav Huna cut off the guy's hand? We said that up above. Right? David, you didn't hear that. But everybody else heard that Rav Huna cut off the guy's arm. That's not the halacha. We don't talk in the way. You can't go to Beis Din and knock off a guy's arm. We've never seen that in Beis Din. That's not brought down to Koshin Mishpat anywhere. So how in the world could he do it? The answer is he saw it was necessary. This was not a guy who came to court one day and they said, oh, he did something wrong. He's like, cut off his arm. It's not like the queen of hearts and what's it called, in Alice in Wonderland. Like, cut off his head. It's not what you do. This is when Beis Din sees something that needs to be done, they'll do it. So what happens? If they see a guy that is mamish going around, cutting out, you know, punching people in the face and knocking out their eyes and saying, all I have to do is pay for it, it's very likely that Beis Din will say, okay, no, you're not paying for it. You're losing your eye. It's shayach for Beis Din to do that. Yeah.
I get why, from a societal level, mm-hmm. what you're saying makes sense, that the option of taking somebody's eye could possibly be there to prevent such a situation. However, it's a very slippery slope of basically to do whatever they want. Yeah, as they see fit.
Granted.
Right, they're not living by the law.
Granted. I'm way oversimplifying it. Check out what it says over there in Simon Aleph and Simon Beis. It's clear. Yeah, there were rules. There are definite rules behind it. Basin is not granted autonomy to do whatever they want. Yeah, I might have not mentioned that as clear as I could have.
Let's say is outspoken and a critic of something and they just decide to off the guy because they don't like that he doesn't...
Which, first of all, is absolutely awesome. But yes, clearly that's not how it works. That's not how it works. But nonetheless, the deterrent idea is supposed to be the idea over here. It's more of the fact that people didn't do it. Again, you know that there's halakhas of Misa, but they only did it once every 70 years. That means they didn't have to worry about it as much. It was not something that was there because people saw it and they said, okay, I better not do it. They stopped themselves from doing it. We're going to end with this. Why mention these things altogether? I'm going to skip the, there is over here, I have the Rabbeinu Bachaya, the Ibn Ezra that gives answers for this, how it's going over here. But I heard from one of my old rabbis, I mentioned him not so long ago, right, Effie Goldman, that says the way to stop fights is to do the following. You want to stop a fight with other people? See the good in other people. Speak out the good in other people. Do good things for others. And go out of your way. Walk out of your way to fight others. That's your eye, your tooth, your mouth, in other words, your hands and your feet. You want to get away from a fight? That's what you do. You use your eye, your teeth, your mouth, your hand, and your foot. That's the idea behind it. When a person doesn't do that, fights will start, and you could lose your eye, tooth, hand, or foot for not acting like a mensch. That's the pshat behind the pasuk. Why we mentioned those over here. One could also point out, and this is my idea as well. Do you notice something about the order of the pasuk? We normally go malin bekodesh ve'in moridin. What does that mean, malin bekodesh? Like by Abdullah, right? Why do we have that order of Abdullah? Perei pri hagafen, perei minei besamim, borei me'orei ha'esh, baruch ha'mavdo ben kodesh l'chol. Malin bekodesh ve'in moridin. That's from the Ben Yishchai when he was 6 years old, if you don't want to feel bad about yourself when you go home today. Ben Yishchai said that when he was 6. He wanted to hold the candle. Either regardless, but that's that. But look over here. How are we going? Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yod tachas yod, regel tachas regel. It's the exact opposite. It's the exact opposite. Because literally, the way we go down, it indicates how far you've fallen. How we start up on a certain level and we brought ourselves down, knocked ourselves down, till it becomes that it just gets worse and worse and worse. That concept of moridin, moridin batuma velo malin. That's the idea that's brought down over here. That's the concept that we're talking about. It's unfortunate that way. So very quickly, what did we say? We went through the ideas of why it can't be literal, why the eye for an eye cannot be literal, it can't be learned that way. We explained a couple ideas of what that's going to be. We brought the Ibn Ezra, we brought the Moshe Zakenu, we brought Rashi's idea, etc. We then brought down the ideas of what it means, this ayin shamayim, with its for Shlomo and the Tam Badas, we gave the hint of the grow with Kesef, right, and how that works that way. And then we asked why it has to be written that way. We gave 6 answers why it has to be written as Ayin Tachas Ayin, even though really refers to Kesef. And finally, we mentioned this idea at the very, very end of what we had over here. We also brought down, I should say, the parties, this idea of the caste and society and how it worked over here. Shkoyach, everybody. We'll stop here.